You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Break a Bat podcast, where baseball meets Broadway. An attempt to show that my two favorite mediums don't have to live in such separate worlds and maybe even break some stigmas. We're happy to have you with us. Now let's play ball. Hello and welcome to Break a Bat. I'm your host, Al Malafronte, coming at you for the Broadway Podcast Network. Today, we're joined by a 20-year Broadway veteran with some phenomenal credits, including Saturday Night Fever, Legally Blonde, Wicked, 9 to 5, Rocky the Musical, and most recently, Pretty Woman. Here on Broadway, he's actually a three-time Tony Award nominee, and on the West End, an Olivier Award winner for his performance in Groundhog Day. We're really happy to welcome him to the podcast. So with that being said, if you'll please turn your attention to home plate, just beyond the marquee, now batting, Andy Carl. Andy, what's up, brother?
Thank you for listing my resume. That was that's great. So nice to be reminded. It's like I mattered back, you know, before May. That's amazing.
We need all the positive reassurance that we could get in these times.
Exactly. Yeah, certainly. And you're doing, you know, a great service by doing these interviews. I mean, I've listened to so many of them and I just love it. It's really interesting. It's your interesting approach on the world that, you know, we are in as far as Broadway, and then peppering it with your favorite thing, baseball. So, I think it's interesting because it's like, when I heard about it, it's kind of how I reacted to when I heard about they were going to audition for Rocky the Musical. I was like, why would anyone do that? So it's just like, it was like, how do you fit those two worlds? How do you make Rocky into a musical? Or how do you do a podcast about baseball and Broadway? Then I listened. Then I was just like, so involved and so invested in people's stories, because it's beyond that, because you make the bridge happen. You close the gap.
Well, thank you. It's a labor of love. And, you know, when I get to talk to folks like you, it's even more of a thrill because, you know, rumor has it that you were quite the high school baseball player. I think you got to tell us about that.
According to some, I really loved it. Loved Little League. They called me the Polish Cannon because I had such an arm at that point, probably from lanky limbs, able to get a lot of velocity on that ball. But I played a hell of a Little League game, all county for that, and it was great. Then I got involved in swimming, kind of around. Actually earlier than baseball, I was involved with swimming. So I had sort of this like swimming during one part of the season and then going and playing baseball at another part of the season. It was very athletic. And then, I mean, I wanted to discuss this with you guys as a sort of like how guys approach baseball and sports and all that stuff. And obviously, and I don't want to get dark with the conversation, because this happens to a lot of guys and women as well, who get involved in sports and they have their fathers with them throughout like a certain part of their getting into it. Then my parents got divorced sort of when I was around 13 or 14, and I completely lost interest in sports. It's sort of also the same time I sort of got involved with singing and going in another direction and becoming involved in theater. So my connection with like baseball and theater stopped at one point and it picked up with theater. So I don't know if that's ever occurred with anyone you ever talked to or is in your life. And I'm an older person now. It doesn't bug me as much. It was just interesting to think about guys who get involved in sports and how it prolongs itself throughout its life. It could be involved with your father or a family member, and then something happens and then you no longer have interest. Have you heard anything like that before?
Well, I can relate from personal experience in the sense that, so I lost my dad when I was 15, but, gotcha. You know, so right around the same age. But what was interesting was, you know, especially for me, it was a little different because, you know, you still had your dad around.
Right.
For me, especially being 15, that's such like, it's a crazy age as it is. Baseball, and I was doing sports in the arts, you know, from age 10 through that point. The Yankee thing almost went to another level for me just because it was a way to keep his memory around. It was a little bit different with you because, you know, you were living with your mom at that point after the divorce.
Yes. So yeah, it became sort of like they didn't want to see each other. I was really going between two households, and it just seemed like his involvement with like creating a new life and my mother trying to like, you know, create a new life as well. And me going on through school, feeling sort of like disassociated with something that I connected heavily with my father, kind of like didn't happen anymore. And my brother really was older than I was. So he had like, he had moved out and that kind of stuff. But it was interesting because I know this for sure. I know over the years I've examined that part of like, why did I like lose interest completely? It's like, oh, it's your, you know, it happened right around the same time you were involved with this divorce with your parents, which, and they're both lovely people. It was just it was a matter of like something I shared with him, and now I was living with my mother. And so that it just sort of like, you know, dissipated that way. No fault of anyone's, you know, don't want them to be miserable in their marriages. But I certainly, it's just sort of like, oh, that's something I'm not going to do anymore. I'm not going to be involved with that. It'll be a distant memory until, you know, much later when the Broadway softball league started up and I dove head first into it.
Now, I know you're from Baltimore. When you were playing Broadway Softball League, were you trying to emulate Cal Ripken in the infield? Were you trying emulate, like, were you pitching like a Jim Palmer? Because I know you're a Baltimore guy. So these are the parallels that are coming to mind.
You're talking like, that's the stuff I was really into. I was really into the Orioles right at that heyday with Cal Ripken Jr. and Eddie Murray. You know, Earl Weaver was, you know, their manager. It was a great time for the Orioles. So that's another thing. It's kind of like the Orioles sort of lost speed after like 84 or something. And, you know, I think they're picking back up now. It was very strange. But yeah, I sort of, you know, when I was growing up, like Cal Ripken Jr. was like, he was the S-H-I. And you can finish that word. He was the man. And it was so wild. I remember that's the memories I have of going to the field and seeing him, Eddie Murray out there, and just was Frank Robinson as well. All those guys were just amazing. That's my heyday with it. So I think I left on a good note.
And obviously, you picked up the arts as well. Let me ask you, you know, being a guy who went from being an athlete and then into the theater world, you know, from high school and then onward, how was that viewed? You know, as a guy. You know, it was considered pretty jockey to that point, and then, you know, kind of made that transition, you know, growing up, you know, was it viewed as cool to do both sports and the arts where you grew up, or was there a stigma, or just give me a little insight into that?
I don't think it was viewed as uncool. It was, my mother played organ for her church. Music was always around. And she's the one that had the Who's Tommy soundtrack and Jesus Christ Superstar, West Side Story. She had the albums in the basement. And so, music was constantly around my house. The arts was sort of involved. So I think people expected that, oh, of course, Andy's going to, you know music, and he's going to sing in the chorus at his elementary school and his high school, because, his mother literally is a musician. It wasn't that it was not cool. It was just something that none of my family had ever like done before. Like my mother was definitely an organ player, a church player, and a teacher. And my dad was like construction worker, you know, baseball, everything sort of like that. And there was separation. So I had them around the house all the time. It's just that no one had ever mixed the two. And I was probably the first to like gap that bridge. Bridge the gap.
Yeah, Bridge to the Gap, exactly. Like kind of like what we're doing on this podcast with sports.
Exactly. Exactly. You're bringing me back to my, you know, my roots in a sense, things I've avoided for years.
Well, we're happy to be the show to do that. And, you know, obviously it's cool that your mom, you know, had that musical and artistic background. You're going to enter a very challenging industry that is acting and then, you know, eventually Broadway. Did you have your parents' support at that time?
Yeah. I mean, because there was music in the house, it wasn't like I was doing something crazy. It wasn't like I was all of a sudden singing when nobody else had ever heard songs before in the house. So I think they invested themselves into me having the curiosity to go do it. But my brother, who was 5 years older than me, he was kind of the wild kid in our family. And he's the one that, like, you know, went off into crazy stuff. So I always looked like, you know, nerdy Andy, in a sense, but I was, you know, which means I got away with a lot of stuff, especially just sort of like finding out what to do with myself. And so when I, here's the story. I'm such a bad kid. So I was in high school. I was in my second year of high school, and a friend of mine was in the bathroom smoking, and I went in to go to the bathroom during one of my classes, and he was like, boom. I was like, what? Oh, he's just smoking away. He's like, hands me the cigarette. I go, never did this before. I take it, and in walks the vice principal, and he just nails me. And like, we go to the office. That my friend doesn't go to the office. He's the one that's staying in the bathroom. So got into so much trouble. I got suspended for like a week. And my mother, who's a teacher, mind you, freaking out, doesn't know what to do. And just like, and I'm just sitting there like, I don't know what to do either. So she kind of encourages me, because I had been singing in the chorus in high school and in middle school. She encourages me to go audition for a children's musical out in Baltimore at a dinner theater. That's what hooked me, because I met this family of actors and directors and people putting together costumes, and everybody's sort of putting together a stage show. And I was like, this is it. This is my new family. This is exactly what I was looking for. I needed to be a part of something, like I was in sports when I was younger. I needed to be part of putting together something. And I never looked back. And I think my parents saw that. Certainly my mother saw that and was like, oh, that's what he's going to do. That's what he's going to be involved in, because I was totally curious about it.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
When you were growing up, musical theater, especially on Broadway, was so different from what you see now. And it's pretty interesting. You've kind of found a niche in the movie musicals. Did you ever envision, you know, like entering into this industry, you'd be in anything from Saturday Night Fever to Pretty Woman, then of course, Rocky the Musical, for example?
Dude, are you old enough to have seen Tommy on Broadway?
I was born in 90. So actually, my show was Once Upon a Mattress, 97. So I think it was just after that. It was good. I like Sarah Jessica Parker.
so my Once Upon a Mattress was Tommy, the Who's Tommy on Broadway. I I knew that album backwards and forwards just from the soundtrack from the movie, and from, like, I was really into The Who and Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and all that kind of stuff. And then I heard, and I was getting into musicals kind of at the same time. And then I heard that Tommy was going to be on Broadway. I was like, oh my God, stop everything. I went up and I went back and forth to New York 8 times. I saw that show. I was obsessed. It's the one and only show that I've ever done that for. And I was the spectacle of it all. The soundtrack coming alive for me. It melted my brain, and this thing is like, if you don't do this, you're dumb, because it was a calling at that point. It was everything sort of I was involved in coming together at a hilt. So that was it. I just sort of, I got hooked on that show, and it you know, you see the person you are before you, or hear the person you are hearing from.
Now, I mentioned the movie musicals. Rocky is obviously very popular among our sports fans, at least the movie was. How did that project come about?
Rocky, as I said before, I was like, I heard from my agent at the time that they were auditioning. And my first reaction was, that's ridiculous. They can't, how are they going to make Rocky into a musical? This guy talks low and slow, and he, you know, he's kind of like a bumbling guy. He doesn't know how to get anywhere. And make him sing. I was like, it's just not going to work. Anyway, I go back and I watch the movie, because I was like, all right, I'll go in. Is this a joke? No, it's not a joke. Let's do it. I go and watch the movie, and all of a sudden, this like beautiful independent film that I'm reminded of again, the first Rocky. I'm reminded how beautiful and heartfelt, and then the championing at the end, where you can't help but, like, every time you watch it, you're in your seat, like you just want to leap up and be like screaming for Rocky, and you're watching every hit come alive. And I was like, oh, I need to do this as a musical. This is something that I've never done before. It's sort of creating this iconic character again and making him sing when nobody's going to expect how beautiful it's going to be. That was really thrilling. It was sort of getting the idea that this character that has nothing comes up and fights for, you know, the championing of himself as well as for his community. So I go in, or no, I don't go in. I send in a tape. I send in a tape. We don't send tapes anymore. I sent in through a video on my computer my audition, which was sort of in my living room, because they were, I don't know where they were. I couldn't get to them or something. So I sent it to them, and I sang, I think some like something from Eddie and the Cruisers, in a tank top, which we're both wearing right now.
Thanks for exposing me, Andy. Appreciate
we're both
that,
in tank tops, because you have to be. No pants, I think, as well. So I send the tank top, because I just wanted to get the, you know, the vibe, like he's in a tank top half the time, or, you know, he's in his boxing gear. They got to see the body. You got to see. And I wasn't nearly as fit as I was going to be once I did the show. But something clicked. I sort of knew how to handle this guy and make him somewhat real and heartfelt and as beautiful as the movie wanted the character to be. And so it's like, you know, Stallone plays it the best because it's him, it's his baby. But I wanted to emulate that. And anyway, they saw that the video, it came to them on a 2-inch screen, because somehow I got the platforms mixed up and sent this like tiny, tiny little video of them that they could barely, of myself that they could barely see, but something that Aarons and Flaherty saw proved that I could come in and do a callback. And once I walked in the room with this part, sort of, I had like maybe another week to work on it and the songs and the sides and remember what the, you know, the beauty and the honesty of the film, everything just sort of clicked into exactly what I just felt completely comfortable with it. And I sort of knew that I owned the character when I was doing that audition. And like the next day they called. So it was really, that was thrilling. That was a thrill, but I also knew that, I have a mountain to climb with this show. This is going to be kind of epic, with this character.
Now I know Sly came to see the performance. Did he give you any feedback or any, did he tell you how much he enjoyed it? What did Sly tell you when you got to meet him?
Yeah, he's a tough nut to crack. And I was also totally respectful. I was like, I'm going to do the best I can with this because it deserves it. I'm bringing 120% every time to the rehearsals and also to the performance. It's so ingrained in his DNA, this role. It's really interesting, the story. Yeah, and he's done a million franchises, but this is the one that sort of set his existence in our movie, you know, cinema world, and for the rest of, you know, time, it seems. So I needed to be respectful of that. So maybe I didn't come in strong, like, this is what I want to do with it. I let him talk. There's some really interesting conversations. We met approximately 5 times. The first time was, I had never met him before, but we were putting together the reading for the first time at Juilliard, in some room at Juilliard. And, we're there, we're basically with our, you know, books in front of us. And, it's the day of the presentation and he walks in and it's freaking Sylvester Stallone. It's Rocky, about to see my performance of Rocky. And I was like, I put aside the freaking out. I was like, don't do it. Don't you dare freak out. You open your mouth and speak, because when your first words come out of you as the character, which I don't remember the exact first line, but I definitely used the voice of him to sort of emulate that. It's a very tricky game with that role. He was sitting 5 feet in front of me, and I was pretty much freaking out. It was interesting, but he loved it. And afterwards, he told me, he's like, you get it. You get the humility. You understand this character. We're going to talk about it. And he gave me some, ideas to think about, especially the song in Rocky's Heart, which is "Smile, though your heart is breaking." It was interesting that he chose that song as his character, because this guy kind of smiles, or at least gets through this horrible world that he lives in and this horrible town. He's got no money. He's a terrible boxer. And he works for a guy who basically breaks legs, and he's a leg breaker. And it's interesting that, Rocky chose to, smile, and he wants to do the better idea of what he's doing. He doesn't want to break people's thumbs. He doesn't want to have to do that. He knows he has to make some money, but he's like, he lets people go away. It's really interesting. It's like he wanted a better life for himself, and he was given the opportunity. And then what does he do with that? He takes the opportunity and runs, which is kind of how I thought about the role. I'm like, what am I going to do with this tremendous opportunity to play this role? I'm going to step up like Rocky, and I'm going to, champion through.
That's so true of, what baseball players and actors and actresses, deal with on a daily basis, in Broadway. So I think that role is such a great embodiment of so many things on so many levels. And, I just wanted to ask you, I know that I mentioned before that you have done a lot of movies turned musicals. Do you have a favorite role on Broadway that you've done? I know you've done some great ones.
Yeah, I mean, they're all obviously great for so many reasons. To get an opportunity to play Rocky was pretty incredible. That in itself, and the staging that Alex Timbers did, the fights at the end, there was so much the heart of that. But what on the flip side of that is a character like Phil Connors from Groundhog Day, which is sort of the complete opposite of Rocky. It was somebody who has just doesn't care about anybody else's problems and kind of wants them to move out of the way so he can get to the next thing. The great thing about Phil Connors in Groundhog Day is that he lives sort of the opposite journey that Rocky does, where he's a real jerk and he doesn't sort of see the people around him, or if he does, he dismisses them because he has no time. He does not care about your problems. He does not care about you or Punxsutawney, and he wants to get the hell out of there. Towards the end, the journey to Phil Connors' show at the end is that he realizes that everybody around him makes him better, makes him the person that he is, makes him stronger. Groundhog Day used so much of what I had to offer as far as an actor, as far as a musician, as far as a comedic actor, as far as slapstick, as far as emotional. It just utilized so much of what I had inside me. And it also had a very huge metaphysical idea behind it and the magic of it and how do you respond to these incredible times. And honestly, right now in the world we're living in, I feel like we're all living a little bit of Groundhog Day. So it speaks to me every day, that show.
I can imagine, you know, speaking of the world we're living in now, you know, let's say if Broadway comes back in January, like they're talking about. I know we've spoken to some folks who've, you know, maybe talked about the spring. They might feel more comfortable performing then. What are you doing right now to stay on your game during the pandemic, Andy?
It's harder. It's like hard some weeks and then it's easy some weeks. I mean, you've got this podcast going on, so you got a game plan. Like my plan is like, all right, I'm going to write the great American play for everybody to know. And then there's some weeks I'm like, I can't write a thing, and I toss the whole script in the trash. I think the thing about it is like, it's regiment. You have to keep yourself in some sort of regiment in order to sort of deal with what we're dealing. So working out and doing that stuff in the morning, which I'm, you know, it's, you're working out, like, what am I working out for? I don't understand. So that you keeping the hope alive, I think, is the big thing, and keeping the hope alive for Broadway to come back. And we all want it to come back because it's so affected our lives. It's why we're talking about it right now. It changed the course of my entire life. How do I get that back? I also have to be able to accept change, because I think Broadway, all for the better. I know it's going to change for the better because it's going to be something else and something that we're aware of. We've had theater through our lives and all that kind of stuff. It's existed for hundreds and hundreds of years, but it's going to be a little bit different when we come back, because it's a matter of maybe we'll be more appreciative of it. Maybe we'll be less into a certain type of show. Maybe we'll want to see a message that can really speak to all of us for what we just went through with all this. It will be interesting, because I don't have the answers of when and how. I just have the answer of how I'll feel when it comes back. And I'm very excited for it. I'm excited for change. I'm excited to like write my own stuff. I've been writing the hell out of songs, and I've been putting stuff together. I've been putting demos remotely with some of my actor friends and making things happen. It's interesting when I'll write a song and I'll have somebody record it for me remotely. They'll be like, that was so much fun. I haven't been able to create in such a long time. What's happening with it? Let's get it going. Let's try to make this happen. And that's when I'm, you know, reinvested back into, oh, it's going to be okay. We're going to be fine.
And it's nice to see that you've gotten to do some pretty cool things, you know, on the art side during this quarantine. I will say I'm a big Paul Williams fan. I think he did a pretty good job with the Rainbow Connection singing alongside.
Oh, you saw that.
That was awesome. I did.
It was nice, because again, it's a remote thing. So you don't know what's really happening when you're recording it. You don't know who's going to appear on these things, but like, you know, Patti LuPone is on it and all these incredible, you know, mainstays of your life as far as actors and musicians. And it was great. It was a great charity to give a little something for. And I think that's how we're all dealing with stuff right now, is like trying to give as much as we can in order to feel like, you know, we belong on this earth and are a part of something. And to be asked to do something like that was great. And to, you know, be on the same screen with Kermit the Frog, always awesome. Another He's my Cal Ripken Jr. of my childhood.
I do wonder on the baseball and Broadway parallel side, if you could ever get someone to appear in 2,632 consecutive shows, let's say over the course of like a few years, like, cause let's say, you know, baseball, you have an off season, obviously, and you know, sometimes you're in between shows, but I wonder if someone would ever do 2,632 on Broadway.
Consecutive. Has somebody, a Phantom of the Opera, done that? There's gotta be people that are close. I know like shows don't run that long, that many performances, like, you know,
right.
You have to have a show run that long, and Phantom of the Opera did, or is it there yet? I don't even know it's there yet, but you know,
They had a little hiatus. I think Lion King is the longest like consecutive one right now.
Oh, wow. So, you know, you got to have some crew guy in the back who's been there every single day. So we'll give it to him.
We'll give him the Ripken credit.
Exactly. Look, my wife Orfe like never calls out. She's freaking cords of steel. It's amazing. I'm going to knock on wood. But it's wild. I try to live up to that. You know, I missed a few shows, like Groundhog Day when I tore my ACL completely. I had to miss a couple shows. And so that was tough for me because I loved it so much, which makes you think that Cal Ripken Jr. must just love the game that much that he will show up. I'm sure he's had some 80% days. I'm pretty sure he's shown up with a cough and not feeling at his best, but he got through, or they, you know, maybe they didn't play him as long for a few innings, or I'm not so sure, but we should check that out. That'll be interesting to know that if he ever had like an off day, because what we do as actors, I think we deal with percentages as far as like going back into work. So if I'm at 80%, I'll still show up. I'll just have to warm up, you know, a lot that day. If I'm at 100%, obviously, but below that 80, it's like, I'm just not going to give the audience a really good performance. This won't be good. If I'm going to cough or like, you know, sneeze or sound like, you know, Kermit the Frog, in one of these performances, I can't do that to them. Or you just buck it up, you know, stretch it out, vocalize and say, I feel sorry for this audience. And then you get back out there on the stage.
Well, Andy, anytime I've seen you on Broadway, you always give 100%, at least from what I've seen. And I hope you could bring 100% to this final segment that we do to wrap every show on Break a Bat.
Here we go.
All right. Now, are you familiar with who, I know you're a little rusty on the baseball, but do you know who Aroldis Chapman is?
No.
All right, so Aroldis Chapman is the fastest throwing man ever. He's the closer for the Yankees, a six-time All-Star. He holds the record for fastest fastball. He once, actually twice, threw 105 miles an hour. Now he's actually Cuban. They call him the Cuban Missile, but since Broadway's kind of gotten a hold of him because of our podcast, they call him the Apex Predator because they like to compare him to Regina George. So
there you go.
So what I want you to imagine, Chapman's on the mound. He's bringing in heat. I'll ask you a question. You say the first thing that comes to your head. How does that sound?
Great.
All right. Favorite New York City meal?
Daniela's pasta.
Now, when you say Daniela's pasta, are we talking like red sauce, clam sauce, vodka sauce?
They have a great linguine white sauce, linguine with clams white sauce.
I'm Italian. I can very much appreciate that answer.
Yeah, it's delicious. And it comes, and there's a lot of it. So that, I love that too, especially after a show, just pounding down pasta.
Team Jeter or Team A-Rod?
Ooh, I'll go Jeter. Why not? What's your answer?
As a player, it's Derek Jeter. But in retirement, A-Rod's a cartoon character. It's just so entertaining to me. It's like I am so fascinated with his behavior and his life off the field. I've kind of like shifted to Team A-Rod.
And I'm gonna look him up and see what shenanigans he's gotten into.
All right, I hope your ribs are pretty strong with those morning workouts, Andy, because you might break one watching some of this.
You know, I love a funny guy, so I might switch my answer.
All-time favorite film.
Oh man, that's a good one. Princess Bride is really up there. Come on. Ferris Bueller changed my life. Karate Kid. I just gave you three, but we'll stick with Princess Bride.
All right, and it, you know, from what I gather about your musical taste, you're a pretty big classic rock guy. What's your Desert Island album?
My Desert Island album. Actually, like lately, I've gotten into bluegrass covers of like 90s rock tunes. It's so much fun because you re-listen to the song that you loved from the 90s and you're like, oh, those lyrics are really deep and profound and work in any type medium of music, any type of music. And so it's been really interesting. I'll take a bluegrass album of, I don't know, Van Halen. Why not?
What's the coolest moment that you've gotten to share on stage with your fellow Tony nominee wife, Orfe?
I am not telling people to film shows, but we had the privilege to film Legally Blonde with MTV. Some of my favorite, like I'm able to look at that and the two of us just laugh at ourselves at the characters we were playing and playing opposite each other, as Kyle, the UPS guy, and Paulette, the hairdresser. And, it's still up there. Had so much fun with that.
Most embarrassing onstage moment.
Funny enough, with my wife, when we first started dating, and I was so out of my league with her, we were in Saturday Night Fever on Broadway, and I was the understudy to the lead, but it was my first time going on as Tony Manero. And I walk out into the scene that we do together as Annette and Tony, and I'm just like, I'm staring at this gorgeous girl that I'm really into in my life, and that just sort of like wipes away all my lines in my head. And she covers for me for about three or four lines. And then I get back on track when I start dancing. So thank God for her.
Switching to that's actually a positive. Usually when we transition from this question to the next one, I say, well, switching to positive,
I can give you plenty of negatives. I'll just go with that one. Like, yeah, ripping out my knee in the middle of, you know, a show on Broadway. That's the worst and embarrassing and awful, but I got over it. It's not bothering me at all.
Proudest moment of your career.
Probably that same night that I ripped my knee out, crawled off stage crying, looked around. Andrew Call, who was on that side of the stage, talking in my ear saying, "You're right, buddy, we got you." Brings over a knee brace and like wraps it around my knee. So crew people are helping me out. Everybody's sort of like really worried, awful moment. I'm in tears. Because this is two nights before I open the show on Broadway, and I'm thinking, it's over. Something clicks in my head. I hear Rocky, you know, keep on standing, that kind of thing. I start thinking about the show must go on, which is really cliche, but it's, and then I start thinking about the part of the show that I just ran off stage. I had just become the Phil Connors, the good Phil Connors, and I was helping everybody out, and I had hurt myself and I was crawling. So I had one more song to sing called Seeing You. And I was like, damn it, I need to complete this story. So my proud moment, you know, maybe people have judgments of it, is that I wrapped my leg up and I got it back out there, and my whole cast was like, yeah. And the audience was like screaming. So like, just so happy that I'm doing it. And I was like, oh, I'm teaching myself a lesson, and I'm teaching everybody else, I guess, a lesson. I wasn't trying to teach everybody a lesson. Everybody's joining on this moment right now, which brought theater to a very high level in my brain as far as what it can do and how it can affect people. And I finished the show and sang that song called Seeing You, for the audience, for my cast members, and for just the elements of life about being able to see everybody in front of you and realize them and love them and try to see them for the first time. And it was a very artist life moment. I'm very proud of that one.
Lastly, best piece of advice anyone ever gave you?
People must always have trouble with this because as actors, and I'm sure as baseball players, we get a lot of advice along the way. Some things inspire us to get over small hills and up big ones and over top other ones. It all just goes down to the first spark of wanting to take this on as a life, as an actor. My director in Greece back in Baltimore when I was like my first year of college, he had seen a lot of Broadway shows. He had seen a lot of people and a lot of actors, and he pulls me aside and he's a pretty crusty guy. He didn't really like give compliments at all, but he pulled me aside. He's like, have you ever thought about like really doing this as a profession? Because I think you could do this. I mean, to hear that as a person who kind of like, I do this because I love it sort of thing, but to hear like, oh, you think I'm good enough. I wasn't all that good back then, but I spent the rest of my life like improving and taking on challenges and knowing that this was my mission. And that was the fire. It was one person to tell you, you're good. You should try doing this and you should follow your dream. And so that was a really important turn in my life.
Well, Andy, this was awesome. I cannot wait to see you back on Broadway, and I cannot thank you enough for joining us tonight on Break a Bat.
I hope to see you there too, man. Thanks for the interview. It's great, and I talk way too much about weird things. And I just really glad that you're doing this for me and for all of us. So keep doing it, man.
I appreciate it, brother. And Andy, if everyone wants to connect with you on social media, where can they find you?
At Andy_Carl, Twitter, Instagram. That's all good. You know, my wife sort of set it up for me. So I kind of just like, oh, I see messages from people and I go and I like them. That's about it. That's my technology. I can press a little heart button. That's me.
These days, you're better off not being that engaged with
them. Oh my God. You know, you can sit on your phone all day, and that's probably what we're all doing. I mean, we're on a computer right now. Oh man, let's go get outside and throw some ball, man.
Yeah, let's do it, Andy. You're the man, brother. And to the Batheads at home, thank you so much for joining us tonight. This is Al Malafronte signing off for the Broadway Podcast Network. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Break a Bat. This is produced by the fine folks at the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit and subscribe at bpn.fm/breakabat. You can find me online at break_a_bat_podcast. And you can also find the Broadway Podcast Network on Instagram at Broadway Podcast Network. It's been so great having you here with us today, and we'll see you next time. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.